Chapter 23. Compliance. I live in a gated community where residents are promised immaculately manicured grounds. That's what the lease says, anyway. Call me crazy, but immaculate seems a lofty claim to uphold. Still, there it is in black and white. In reality, patches of matted brown grass make a piecemeal quilt of the lawns. Discourteous residents frequently leave behind little surprises left by their dogs, and dandelions teem. The effect of the latter on me, for some reason, is similar to seeing pictures of the Suriname toad. You know, the one that hatches its young from widening pores across its back. Disturbing. Just before the infestation becomes utterly unbearable, the landscaping company will show up in their green and white trucks spreading out across the property. This does little to solve the doggy-do issue, except perhaps to scatter it over a wider area where it might act as fertilizer. However, areas of dead grass are soon disguised with some sort of unnaturally green chemical spray, and the dandelions are beheaded by the whizzing metal blades of mowers, or flattened under the weight of their tractor-like wheels. The following day, with the smell of freshly cut grass still lingering, you'd look around and think you were living in Beverly Hills. If you don't look too closely, it might even seem immaculate. But before 2 days have gone by, the trampled weeds begin to rear their heads like waking cobras, and by week's end, the lawn is once more choked by swarms of hydra so numerous, even Hercules would take one look and throw in the towel. The best advice so far? Clipped weeds soon return. Don't think it isn't tempting to end the chapter there, leaving you to scratch your head at how this fits in with the rest of the advice in this book. If only life's biggest challenge were an ugly lawn. Forcing compliance is an awful lot like thinking you've beaten a weed by hacking away at the part that offends you. Don't like the angry words your teenage son just shouted at you? Send him to his room. Caught him smoking weed with friends? Take away his phone, internet, and car for a month and forbid him to have any contact with the offending compadres. Think your girlfriend might be tempted to cheat with one of her guy friends? Guilt her with the silent treatment or bombard her with rage until she agrees not to hang out with him anymore. You do this, and so they will do that. The problem goes away. Simple, right? I mentioned in a previous chapter the idea that what someone does is far less important than why. This applies here as well, though from a different angle. It's easy to fixate on effecting an immediate change in another's behavior by using punishment, emotional manipulation, or other tactics. Getting someone to behave the way we'd like makes us feel settled and in control again for a while. If we don't have to look at the problem, we can imagine that it doesn't exist. But realize that such an approach is very me-centered and not particularly focused on the well-being of the other person. This is especially easy to justify to ourselves when the other person is being a jerk. But jerk or no, make no mistake about the fact that forcing compliance is still about me and putting my comfort first. The image comes to mind of the archetypal father from some vague yesteryear, who, upon hearing his son swear, took the lad out behind the woodshed, exclaiming, "This is gonna hurt me more than it hurts you," and then proceeded to administer a sound switching to the kid's backside. Sounds noble, but I can tell you from experience that the aforementioned claim is nonetheless untrue. As I'm writing this, I get the feeling that jaws are slowly clenching and heartbeats are quickening in parents and teachers who think I just don't get it. Please know that I am not against establishing clear guidelines for behavior and issuing consequences for poor choices. I'm actually very much in favor of these things and have used them myself. I'm simply saying that they are not enough. Alone, they do not solve the problem. Consider a young man who uses and sells drugs. When sales are lacking, he also takes the five-finger discount on electronics and other gadgetry and hawks them on the street. Now, if the police finally nab this fellow and put him in prison, his confinement will prevent him from using or selling drugs. Likewise, we can assume with relative surety that he will not steal during the term of his incarceration. Thus, we can now say that he is no longer a drug addict or a thief. The end. I should think the problem with this logic is evident. First, I can tell you, based on the accounts of many I've known personally, that even prison does not necessarily prevent the procurement and distribution of nearly anything behind bars. I can also assert with equal confidence that I've never known jail time of any length to cure a thief or rehabilitate an addict. Once they hit the pavement, cell phones are dialed, familiar circles are reestablished, and old patterns take over right where they left off. Why then is it so much more difficult to see that banishing my son to his room for an outburst of bad language doesn't get at the underlying anger or frustration inside of him? In fact, might it even be exacerbating it? Similarly, grounding a teen for drug use, in essence imposing a prison sentence for a certain length of time, does nothing toward addressing the addiction or the cause of seeking an escape. I can tell you with authority that while you might even be successful for a time at curbing such behaviors by tightening the reins, the problem will not have gone away. Just like those clipped dandelions, the roots are very much alive, waiting for the right moment to resurface. They will blow silent seeds or travel underground if they must, springing up in some unseen part of the yard. But make no mistake, they will emerge. You can control where someone goes outside of the house, but you cannot control what they do during every moment of private time in bedrooms and bathrooms. Where drug use might have been rooted in control issues, and often it is, that sense of control may instead begin to evidence itself in other body addictions associated with control. Eating disorders, pornography, cutting. Further, to keep someone locked into a relationship by making it all but impossible for them to be around other options is not in any way a reflection nor a guarantee of their actual fidelity and love. As is the nature of so many attempts to force conformity, the very measures used in hopes of gaining the outcome I want become the catalyst for pushing someone in the opposite direction. I don't know how many of us have someone in our life from whom we will hear the unadorned truth about ourselves. For those who may not, perhaps you will allow me to be a temporary surrogate here and say, if getting your own way through manipulation and tantrums is your modus operandi, the behavior that needs changing is not someone else's, but your own. In closing, let me reiterate to parents and other caregivers in a bit more detail that, in many instances, implementing consequences is necessary. At these times, however, I find it best to leave as little to the heat of the moment as possible. Lashing out with impromptu punishments, like, "You're grounded from everything for a month," is rarely constructive or effective in addressing the root problem. I suggest having a family meeting, or a one-on-one sit-down, at a time when things are calm and behavior is not an immediate issue. At that time, establish a consequence book. In it, brainstorm together some key behaviors that all agree tend to be reoccurring issues. By brainstorming, I really mean asking, what do you think are the areas where you wind up getting into trouble? Accompanied by some prompts as to specific recent examples, if necessary. Then, together, come up with reasonable, and related consequences for each behavior and write them down. Again, asking first what seems reasonable and steering as necessary. Be specific. For instance, if the issue is rude and inappropriate arguing, perhaps an appropriate and related consequence, however unhip and outdated it may seem, might be missing a preferred activity in favor of staying in and having a conversation together about it. So that entry might look like this. Offense, rudeness, inappropriate arguing. Consequence, miss weekend activity and have a talk with mom or dad. Whatever the case, the important thing isn't so much the nature of the consequence itself as that everyone agrees on what it is and that it is deemed reasonable. Then, the next time the behavior occurs and goes unchecked, there is no need for emotional upheaval. You simply refer to the book and follow through on what was already decided and agreed upon. This makes consequences a choice, not a whim, and no one has to be the bad guy. A few more thoughts on this. If you decide to implement the book, and you find down the line that you've left some behaviors out, make the catch-all consequence a weekend discussion, preferably at a time that works for everyone, not just the parent, with the express goal of adding that behavior and consequence to the book. In essence, the first one is a freebie, including everyone in the process of identifying negative behaviors and deciding upon reasonable consequence does wonders toward decreasing the frequency of those behaviors, while keeping emotional flares to a minimum and reinforcing the idea of personal choice rather than punishment. Really want to put yourself out there? Allow your son or daughter to suggest consequences for your telltale bad behaviors as well. Still thinking I'm talking through my hat? Please know that I did this very thing with the two volatile teens for whom I served as guardian over a combined span of nearly 4 years, and with good success, I might add. Even with such measures in place, this still does not automatically get at the underlying factors influencing behavior without the addition of a crucial next step. Consequences should always be more about creating downtime and space, as free from emotional bias as possible, during which to have deeper conversation about those roots of behavior and less about controlling actions or forcing conformity.